Welcome to the Internet's only South Carolina Gamecock football podcast that records whenever we damn well want to, because you get what you pay for here. After a phantom recording of last week that never was, partly because we may or may not have been too scared to talk about our opponent from yesterday, guys, it's good to be back with you. I feel like it's been a long time since we've last spoken. There was the thing that happened yesterday, but there were also a lot of other things that happened. Sam and Alex, alongside me as always. No, you did nail
the uniform prediction, by the way.
Did.
Congratulations, yeah, so you did it once. Come at me when you've done it three times in a row.
I think, yeah. Well, I haven't done it three times in a row, but I think I've hit it twice this year.
Well, it doesn't matter if you don't do it in a row, so.
Fair enough. consecutive makes.
Hey. The only thing I've done right on this podcast this year is like the two or three times in a row I got the uniforms right. So just let me have it, okay?
Yeah, I really feel like I have gotten crystal game balls multiple times in a row, but
and there's
I've,
a
never
reason,
gotten the, I've never gotten the uniform.
There's a reason right. I'm abstaining from crystal game balls.
I was gonna say if there's something that you haven't gotten right this year, Sam, it is crystal
everything
game balls,
I do,
you do this thing.
Everything I do, well, no matter how ridiculous it seems, has a reason.
Has its purpose.
Well, 99% of things I do.
There'd be madness, yet there'd be method in it.
Yeah,
that's said it best. Gentlemen, there were winners and there were losers of last week, and you know, college football season's almost over. But the season has still kind of stayed pretty much on brand. So, who do we have for our Week 12 winners and losers?
Well, I'm going to start with my winner, who is Kendrick Rogers from Texas A&M. In a great basketball scoring game of seven overtimes, Rogers didn't even have that great of a statistical night in comparison to the rest of his receivers. He only had 53 yards and two touchdowns. And I say that like that's a good night, but when you have seven overtimes and you score 74 points, you feel like you might have a little bit more of a statistical night. But anyway, in the third overtime, down 49-41 on fourth down, he made possibly the catch of the century, whether that be high school, college, or NFL, setting up a fourth overtime and inevitably a win for Texas A&M. I don't know if we can somehow link this video in the show notes. It's on SEC's Twitter account for those of you listening and want to go check it out. But he's got one guy hanging all over his right shoulder pad and somehow manages to get his left arm up while falling to the ground and makes this unbelievable circus catch to send it into a fourth overtime. And again, you know, A&M ends up winning that thing three overtimes later. So Kendrick Rogers, winner of the week. I have a couple of losers, and they're really just quick, like loser and sub-loser. My first one is Florida State. Not only did they get worked by that rival, we empathize with you, Florida State, but they also snapped a five-year streak over the Gators in which they had been winning. And they snapped a 36-year bowl streak. Willie Taggart certainly knows how to start the year at a school with a storied program. It just didn't. It just happened when he was at South Florida, not at Florida State. My two sub-losers, number one, Michigan. Going into that game yesterday, Michigan in the FBS was the number one overall defense in the country. In the country, and they give up 62 points to Ohio State. Jim Harbaugh is the only Michigan head coach in the history of Michigan football to start 0-4 against Ohio State, and he just got coach circles around. Urban Meyer, as much as I hate that guy, absolutely demolished Jim Harbaugh in every aspect of the game yesterday. And my last sub-loser is Hugh Jackson, and this just happened today. I don't know if you guys saw this, but for those of you that don't know, former coach of the Cleveland Browns gets fired. The next week gets hired by the Cincinnati Bengals as an assistant coach and then loses to said Cleveland Browns today 35-20 and tries to go in for the awkward like butt out hug with Baker Mayfield, and Baker Mayfield was having none of it. So Hugh Jackson, also sub loser of the week.
Wanted to throw a couple of statistics at you because I found them both particularly hilarious. Number one, a lot of folks were up in arms about one of two things. One, it took Texas A&M and LSU seven overtimes to get to the NCAA historic mark that they got to last night. It also took them seven overtimes for Kellen Mond to get to 280 yards of passing. They only amassed 280 yards of passing offense and scored 74 points. Mm. That in and of itself, guys, take a little bit of a bow. Like, that's kind of a thing. That's pretty nuts. Also, people want to talk about the, you know, the NFL and their lack of defense or whatever. That was a pretty damn entertaining game and probably one of the most entertaining NFL games that I've ever watched ever. Also happened to be a Big 12 reenactment 2 weeks ago. I mean, granted, the teams that produced that weird, wild, wonderful event might have led to people's like distaste for the whole entire affair, but hey, points aren't a bad thing. But and also too, another statistic that might be of note for everybody, on the Michigan note, Michigan allowed more passing yards in the first quarter against Ohio State than they've been averaging per game for the rest of the season. I think it was something like they've been averaging 150-some-odd passing yards per game. They had 140 yards or so in the first quarter. That's pretty nuts. I think it's kind of time to start reassessing this whole Urban Meyer, Jim Harbaugh thing. And while I have a particular distaste for both people, clearly, yesterday was a case of, I think Jim Harbaugh needed a victory more than Urban Meyer did. I think from the standpoint of, I'm pretty sure that Urban Meyer's done at the end of the season, no matter what. But now, Michigan fans have a reason to want Jim Harbaugh to hit the old dusty trail. Call me wrong, call me crazy. I think that's the case. My loser, in particular, the traveling road show of SEC officials last night were particularly not great, including a particular call that went on a couple of calls, actually, during overtime of the LSU-Texas A&M game. I felt like, for what it's worth, now, Rod Gardner's push-off call was 18 years ago, but you know, for the officials to do a makeup call 18 years later is a little weird, but it's also a little on brand for them. But the rest of the officiating, now granted, I spend a large majority of my evening watching South Carolina play Clemson. I thought they were just not that great yesterday overall. It was just a kind of a crummy look. Some of the officiating in Georgia Tech was kind of bad too. Now I cannot recall. No, that would have been ACC refs. So guess what? Referees in general. Who are my loser of the week? My winner of the week is FCS playoff, the one that gets it right in your face, people. While the NCAA wants to say that we are not allowed to play more football because of academic integrity and blah, 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 blah. Well, the FCS has been doing it right for God knows how long. The first round winner, Wofford, selects a victory in the most FCS triple option way possible against, you heard it, the Elon Phoenix. In a 19-7 prime number, total prime number victory. They face off against Kennesaw State this Saturday at 2 p.m. So, for once, it looks like Jason Kirk and I have a reason to talk to one another.
So, Richard, I can't remember if it was you or, and I don't want to call you out, so, you know, you can feel free to edit this out, But I think my favorite comment about Elon this weekend was that they were rednecks that pretended to be stuffed shirt.
Oh, that was totally me.
That was my favorite Elon comment. That was so funny. Totally me.
Because all right, and so if there's any person that listens to this podcast and gets offended by this, you know what? Guess what? I'm sorry. But every person that I've ever had an interaction with from Elon is a redneck that tries to ask like a wasp.
That's right, like a wasp. There
I'm
we go.
Sorry. Yeah, that's just it. That's what you are. And interestingly enough, that was an exchange between who also happened to be a classmate of mine at Wofford, who also happens to be the most winningest Jeopardy player of all time.
Oh.
So, there you have that. Suck it, Elon.
Oh, you Wofford Terriers.
Oh, boy.
All right, Sam, what you got?
So winner of the week. I'm going to go with my winner from last week that I would have talked about had we actually recorded, but we didn't. So I'm going to talk about it this time. Kansas football is my winner of the week. Do you know why Kansas football is my winner of the week?
Grass smoothies.
They just hired Les Miles as their head football coach. Yes, I'm aware Les Miles is 65 years old. Yes, I'm aware Les Miles has not coached a football game in roughly two seasons. Yes, I'm also aware Les Miles vastly underperformed for the most part at LSU while also winning like 10 games a year. Let me ask you this question. Is Kansas honestly going to hire anybody better than Les Miles? From a legitimacy standpoint, would they hire anybody better?
They hired a walking heart attack 5 years
ago. They're more legitimate now at 3-9 with Les Miles as their now full-time head football coach than they were when they went to the Orange Bowl under Mark Mangino, wherever the hell his name was.
Mark Mangino.
Yeah.
Of note, a man who has literally consumed a case of beer and an entire XL pizza in one sitting. And I can confirm that.
So, when's the last time Kansas football got any positive publicity? It's a great hire from them. Now what I want to go see them do is I want to see Les Miles pull a rabbit out of his ass, just like he did so many times at LSU, and hire Cliff Kingsbury as his offensive coordinator.
That would be epic.
That would be amazing. Just because it would kind of honestly be hilarious. Just total divergence from Les Miles' I formation man ball, man death ball that he loves to play. Loser of the week, Jimbo Fisher, his program, and his family. Do y'all know why?
Whoa.
Do y'all know why? If you do, don't say it.
Sounds like we're about to come off the top rope, though.
I'm coming off the top rope. But unlike most times, I'm actually going to hit my target this time. So after a great ball game that went to 7 overtimes, Texas A&M came away with a hard-fought 74-72 basketball score of a victory, only to ruin it moments later. Steve Kragthorpe, I think that's how you pronounce it, an offensive analyst for LSU. He's been a head coach in the past, notably at Louisville, and he was hired as, I think, the quarterback's coach or maybe the offensive coordinator a few years ago for LSU. But then he got diagnosed with Parkinson's disease, and he has a pacemaker in his chest or in his heart to stimulate signal to his brain to kind of hold back the symptoms of Parkinson's. So, anyways, after the game, the Texas A&M wide receivers coach, not the wide receivers, the coach, is jumping around and acting like a responsible adult while talking shit to a bunch of 18, 19, 20-year-olds from LSU. Basically just acting like an idiot. So Kragthorpe went up to him very calmly and said, "Hey man, knock it off. You won. Congratulations, but, you know, stay away from my players." That's when Cole Fisher, Jimbo's nephew, who works on staff for Texas A&M football, came up and punched Kragthorpe right in the chest where his pacemaker is located. Kevin Falk, you would remember him. I think, I believe he played for, didn't he play for the Patriots? Kevin Fall? But anyway, he was a running back for LSU back in the early 2000s.
He was a running back. He was awesome.
Director of player development for LSU. Director of player development for LSU stepped in to defend Cragthorpe, and they got into a bit of a scuffle. Meanwhile, Cragthorpe is on the ground, and the Texas A&M doctor is having to look at him and examine him because he says, I'm going to have to go see my neurologist Monday because my pacemaker doesn't feel right because he just got punched in the chest by Jimbo Fisher's nephew. Keep in mind, Cragthorpe is a 53-year-old man, and Cole Fisher can't be older than his mid-20s. Good on you, Kevin Falk, for stepping in and defending your coworker. Shame on you, Cole Fisher. You should be fired. The A&M wide receiver coach should be suspended, and Jimbo should be embarrassed.
You know, and it's and if nothing else, thank God in some places, shapes, and forms for the internet, because that photograph of this punch that comes down between Kevin Falk and Jimbo's nephew is just, this is like the reason why the era of social media even exists.
But you know, at the same time, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, I mean, it's just an extremely unfortunate situation. I mean, and for those that don't know, I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, Sam, you're exactly right. With, you know, my dad used to have a pacemaker, and it's essentially like a boom mic that has been implanted just below your collarbone, and like there's some serious like technological considerations that you have to make as far as, you know, taking care of that and going through metal detectors and blah, blah, blah. But like, if you rub on it, like you can, it's really a pretty archaic piece of technology that's just been surgically placed above your left pectoral muscle. It's kind of, you gotta be pretty ginger around.
What I was going to say was when I saw that picture on Twitter last night, I was going to jump to conclusions and just assume both adults in the picture, being Kevin Falk and Cole Fisher, were just acting like jackasses. Well, yeah, I'm glad I withheld judgment, because Kevin Falk, you did nothing wrong. You know, you were well within your rights to step in there and defend this guy who works for y'all, who has Parkinson's disease and has a damn pacemaker in his chest. Okay, that Cole Fisher kid, one, should be ashamed of himself, should be fired, and should never work in college football again. And if Cragthorpe does have to go to the doctor, and even if there's nothing wrong with his pacemaker, if he just has to go to the doctor to get checked out, I'd be sending my doctor's bill to Jimbo Fisher's office with a note that says,
yeah,
hey,
it'd be weird. I wonder if there's like a place where somebody just got an obscene amount of money to pay for that.
Cragthorpe said in the article that he was going to hold A&M responsible if there were any monetary repercussions from that. He said he's going to send the bill to A&M's athletic department.
Good for him. He should.
Yeah. And yeah, if they don't pay it, he can probably get away with a lawsuit too. So, anyways.
Woo! Go Aggies!
Clemson review. Alex, what did you see last night?
I mean, it is what it is. We knew this would be an uphill battle coming in. I mean, we were depleted on defense. We're missing about 8 starters on D, and they just kept dropping like flies, it seemed like. I know Ken Long went down at one point. We lost Danny Fennell. And I know we gave up like 715 yards of offense, but, and I hate moral victory buts, we seem to compete every down. You know, all we've asked for from this team every year is to just compete. Just give every bit of competitiveness that you have, and we did that. Offensively, though, we were lights out. The play of the game to me was the first time we went for it on fourth down right there at the goal line. You know, you score that one, you tie it. I liked the call to go for it. I just didn't like the play we ran. I thought we were, like, hoping for a call in the back of the end zone. To me, it didn't really feel like we actually had anything that we were actively looking for there. We were just like, We're going to throw it in the back and hopefully somebody makes a play. But you score that when you tie it. But instead, it turns into a 97-yard drive, and they go up 14. And we just couldn't really make up any ground after that. But what I love is that all the talk all week has been about Jake Bentley not being able to put big games together against the likes of Kentucky or Clemson. And he shut up every hater out there. And he had the absolute best game of his career against the number 2 team in the country. You know, future's bright. I loved every second of watching him play last night. And offensively, you know, Debo was lights out. We had too many liabilities and too many vacancies on defense last night to stay in the game. But we competed last night. You know, we knew we were behind that team going in, and it was just nice to see us actually give ourselves a chance.
Still better in Lorenzo Ward defense.
Oh, Lord.
Boy, I'm telling you what, it did me a little bit of good to just watch him mope around on the sidelines yesterday.
His teams still can't stop the run. They gave up 340 yards rushing on 46 carries to a tune of 7.4 yards per carry against Kentucky last night. Not that Carolina did any better, but at the same time, we were playing with, like, high school sophomores last night. So,
well, yeah. I mean, and to I'll get to this in a second, but, you know, to that point, heck, even against some of the best players in college football, period, I'm not trying to discount Benny Snell's importance in the college football realm right now, but Travis Etienne and Benny Snell are like comparing like beluga caviar to like smoked fish bread.
Etienne might be the best running back in the country.
Travis Etienne is a player of generational talent. And I mean, and you talk about, you go back to the, you know, C.J. Spiller era and the thunder and lightning thing, and you keep on going back and back. Like, I don't remember. And Clemson's put out some good running back talent. Travis Etienne is a boss. That kid is outrageous. And that being said, well, hell, we, with like two like tongue depressors tipped together with masking tape and a pipe cleaner at defensive back, we held Clemson to 6.5 yards per carry.
Hey-o.
I mean, that's got to account for something, right? I don't know. Call me crazy. But that being said, I've got numbers, which is something that I normally don't. 6. That's the number 2 freshman that started on defense against the number 2 team in the country. Probably not a good formula for success, just in case you're keeping score. 1. In my opinion, this is a little bit of a nebulous number. Times that the Gamecocks crapped the bed on the play calling front. And it's to Alex's point about the first time on fourth down. That was something. And I think part of that lends itself to South Carolina really didn't run the ball a whole bunch on that second drive. And part of the key to the run game is finding a groove with your back. Now, Mon Benson found a hot hand in the second half, and then Rico Daddle seemingly like must have been late on the bus or something and didn't show up until midway through the third quarter. But I think that some of that was that really none of our running backs had seen any meaningful play time up until that point. And then you put them in the red zone against arguably the best defensive line in the country. And I mean, I can kind of tell you what's going to go on. Anyways, 5. Injuries sustained during the game by Gamecock defensive players. At 3 different points in the television broadcast, I can recall the announcers going back to the well for, I have never seen something like this on one college football team on one side of the ball ever in terms of the injury depletion that the Gamecocks have suffered all thus far this year. I mean, it sounds like I keep running down lists of excuses. I'm not. 2. time that I can definitively say that the defense brought pressure in terms of an actual factual blitz all game long. Now, I know that some of that plays to Coach Muschamp saying that they're very limited in terms of the plays that they can actually call. They have to play man this way. They have to do that because I know that T-Rob likes to play man and blah, blah, blah. But I can only recall two plays in the entire game in which South Carolina brought either gap blitzes or defensive line blitzing or secondary blitzing, anything, blitzing in any format. There was no pressure whatsoever during the game, and it was intentional. That being said, my football bandwidth extends only so far beyond idiot level, so I'm just going to leave that there. 9. That's the number of friends that pull for the orange and purple that called or texted me to give me the, "You guys tried real hard. You guys played better than I thought you would," after the game. I have something to say to pretty much everybody. Now, this is listeners of the podcast. This is my friends. This is my family. This is other people. People that pull for Clemson. People that pull for Carolina. I don't care what it is. This is meant for everyone. And I'm going to say that I can believe all of the things that I'm about to say. Carolina put up a massive fight last night in Death Valley. There, I said it. It's not Death Valley. Get over it. Also, Carolina made some massive mistakes, some boneheaded moves that you can't make against the number 2 team in the country. You can't make against the number 20 team in the country. You can't make it against the number 35 team in the country and expect to win a football game. Carolina played the best offensive game ever against Clemson, against arguably the best defensive unit that Clemson has ever put on the field. All 4 of those guys on the defensive line will be playing on Sunday next year with guaranteed money contracts. Carolina didn't perform well enough. Also, Carolina played its ass off. Carolina is improving. Also, there is at best a 50-50 shot right now where we stand of things getting to the next level on a fundamental basis in Columbia. If or for what, but maybe, if only, take away that thing, stop that thing, stop it. We can play for a divisional, we can vie for a divisional crown every couple of years, but right now, with the way that we are going in college football, guys, we might have to settle in for the, not really the reality, but the possibility that until something, you know, until something clicks, there is going to be this upper echelon of football talent. And it's almost kind of like, it seems to me at least, that it's sort of just like Clemson, Alabama, and buddy, there's everything else. And it's a weird thing for me to have come out of my mouth. And I know that I'm kind of a Debbie Downer sometimes, but I think it's kind of real.
Can I have a massive hot take right now?
Oh, God, please.
I'd be surprised if Clemson gets to the national championship game.
You know, again, for me, it seems like
they're overrated. They're not the second best team in the country.
There were a lot of massive holes that got exposed that I had not seen all year.
Let's not act like, yeah, we hate Notre Dame, blah, 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 whatever. But let's not act like Notre Dame doesn't have a good quarterback and a good offense and a much more competent defense than we do just because they're healthy.
And then again, also, this just harkens to the point of the NCAA is exceptionally stupid in the way that they are both handicapping the field for the playoff and the way that the playoff has been handled writ large throughout its entire existence. I mean, 4 teams is a freaking stupid number to start with. And, you know, I mean, I made a joke about FCS having it right, but
well, there's always going to be one team feeling left out, so you can't please everybody.
Oh, even in the 2014 playoff in FCS, there's always people that are like, oh, you got screwed. It's like, you were never going to win.
Well, you say all that stuff, but look at basketball. They have a 68 team, or is it 72 now? They have a massive tournament, and there's always teams bitching and moaning about not getting in. And there's always talk about going to 92 or 106 or 116. You got to draw the line somewhere.
But for all intents and purposes, too, March Madness tends to draw the best one.
You just said it though. If you're not a top four team in the country, you don't deserve to play for a national championship. So I mean, you just talk about the upper echelon of college football. In FBS football, if you're not a top four team, you don't deserve to play for a national title. Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I don't care who you do. I mean, I don't care who you trot out there, whether it's Ohio State, whether it's Oklahoma, whether it's Notre Dame, or whether it's Georgia, depending on whatever goes on. I mean, depending on what your matchup is, Clemson's going to be the 2 seed. You know, I kind of like Oklahoma in that situation.
No, what's going to be hilarious is when Georgia beats Bama, and because Kirby Smart and Saban collude
and
together,
Bama gets in at the number 4 seed and just sits on Clemson for 4 hours.
Yeah, yeah. And then Georgia beats the brakes off Notre Dame, and then it's the rematch part two. So. I'm telling you, it's going to be Kirby Smart and Nick Saban colluding with the Russians. I'm telling you, it's going to happen.
And then we get a national championship game more boring than the Tiger Woods versus Phil Mickelson match. God dang it.
Is it my turn?
Yeah.
Yeah, you.
All right, so I'm proud of the effort. Jake played his tail off. The offense played their tail off. Hell, the defense played their tail off. They just don't have any talent. I mean, not that they don't have any talent. They're just too depleted. Be expected to do a whole lot. I don't want to hear anyone ever say again Jake can't play well against great teams, because I mean, he broke the South Carolina record for passing yards against Clemson, and I'm pretty sure that Clemson's never given up that many passing yards in a game before, ever.
Ever, never.
Is that true? Did I read that right? So
yes.
That man played, outside of one throw that ended up in an interception, which I honestly don't think he saw the linebacker dropping into coverage.
It was a check down, and
my point is he didn't force it. He didn't like force it. It was just he didn't see the coverage, and the guy jumped in front of the ball. It's not like earlier in the year where a guy would be triple covered and he would throw it and get picked off anyway. I mean, when he threw it, he thought it was the right decision. You know, it wasn't him just forcing stuff and trying to make a play, if that makes sense. And he did all of this with no running game. The guy had no running game. So Clemson was just pinning their ears back and just rushing the passer all night long. And he still threw for 510 yards passing. I mean, I don't want to hear anybody ever again talk about how Jake Bentley can't play against great teams. There is no doubt in my mind that going into next year, he is our number one quarterback, and everybody else competing for QB2. That's how it should be, and that's probably the best thing for our team going into next season. The guy has played out of his freaking mind the last 5 games. I'm trying to find stats, and while I look, I'm going to talk about my other.
It's like 1,600 yards, 14 touchdowns and 3 interceptions, and he's like 108 for 155.
And a QBR in like the 80s. So
it's unrealistic. Like, it's so good.
It's video game numbers. But he's playing like what everybody kind of expected him to play like all season long. You know, like going into this season, all we heard was how good Jake Bentley was in camp. You know, how he's so much better, and his feet were quieter, and he was making good decisions. And I think things kind of... No, it's not just for him. I think you saw it with the wide receivers dropping passes earlier in the season and running backs screwing up. And I think the pressure got to the team a little bit trying to do too much. But that's a different discussion for a different day. I'm like Alex. I hate moral victories. But there's nothing I can really get disappointed about from this game. You know, I said to Alex before we got online here and started recording, I've never been this satisfied with a 3-touchdown loss to anybody, much less to Clemson. I'm not going to stop playing the what-if game. We have like 300 people hurt on the defensive side of the football. We can't change that. Yeah, we lost the game. And yeah, I think it's absolutely fair right now to play the quote what-if game. I'm already looking forward to next November with Jake playing quarterback as a senior against those bastards coming into Williams-Brice Stadium and hopefully a healthy defense. I know it's a year away, but based on what I saw tonight, last night, because outside of Deebo Samuel, I don't think we're going to lose anybody to the NFL draft. I feel really good about that game against Clemson next year, and we'll talk about this in a second. Maybe I'm just, I don't know, I just feel good about it. Obviously, it's a long way out, but I just feel good about it. Side note, I need to talk about this because it was apparent, and me and Alex were also talking about this before the podcast started. Rashad Fenton was terrible last night. He stunk it up all over the field. And I'm not usually about calling out college players, but when you constantly run your mouth and the best thing you've ever done in your junior and senior seasons to get constant pass interference calls, I'm going to call you out. He's absolutely sucked since he dubbed himself hashtag Fenton Island. That's not a thing anybody else came up with. He named himself Fenton Island. And then he, like Alex said, he bought his own hype, which, in my opinion, to be a real mental midget to buy your own hype. Give me a break. He got torched last night. He's been getting torched all season long. Meanwhile, his true freshman counterpart, Israel Mukuamu, played much better than him last night. A true freshman in like his third or fourth game. And I'm not usually like this, but and I appreciate what he's contributed to the football program, but I'm ready for Fenton to graduate. I'm ready to move on. He's a liability. Other than that, that's the only negative thing I really have to say about last night. We didn't have much of a chance. We knew that going in. And I told a bunch of people this week, I just want to see us compete. I want to see us compete, and make it a ball game. And, you know, for 2.5 quarters, we did. And that's with a piece of paper playing defense for us. So that's all I got. Now we're going to talk a little bit. Is the gap closing in the rivalry? I think we have some varying opinions here. Alex, you tee it off and lead us off.
Yeah, I definitely think the gap is closing. We've got some big-time recruits coming in. It seems like every day almost. We've gotten better every game. You and I were talking about before the podcast started how Brian McClendon's ability to call an offensive game seemed to evolve astronomically as the season went on, especially when he went from the booth to being down on the sideline. If we can just stay healthy, we might actually have something. And, you know, even more so in point to talk about the gap closing, not just with new recruits coming in, but I want to take like just one matchup last night and let's look at how much Dylan Wonnum owned Xavier Thomas. You know, one of those guys that was thought to be like the second coming as far as defensive line is concerned. And we throw in a freshman who had to basically start out of necessity halfway through the season. And he absolutely, outside of one false start, Dylan Wonnum played incredible last night. And so when I look at matchups like that, I feel like the gap is closing faster than people think. I know that Clemson seems like they're this super powerhouse that is just like funneling players in. But Clemson has had a really good run of about 4 or 5 years. And it just so happens that, you know, one of those ended up with a national title. And I hate that for us as South Carolina fans. But in the grand scheme of things, they have a much easier road to the national title game than a lot of these other teams. And that includes Bama. Clemson just has an easier road to get there. And they have players to do it. Like Sam said, I don't feel like this Clemson team is better than the one that played for a national title. But what I do feel like is this is a team, Clemson has a team right now that is finding ways to win. They're, you know, they barely squeak out a win against Syracuse, but they found a way to win. They barely squeak out a win against Texas A&M, but they found a way to win. And they struggled mightily in certain halves of games, with teams that should never have been in contention, you know, but they're just finding ways to win because they have a little bit more depth right now.
Yeah.
But I think in the end of it, our gap is closing much faster than people are giving us credit for. One thing that I do want to ask you guys and pose a question to, and we haven't really experienced this in South Carolina in a long time, but we had a lot of injuries this year. I mean, a lot of injuries this year that really hurt us. And the thing that, and I'm not blaming any one particular person, but this is the exact same thing. And part of the reason that Muschamp got let go from Florida, he really started to struggle with some years, and those years that he really struggled were because of so many injuries.
Well, you know, so in Muschamp's third year, one of his most significant injuries was due to a player falling off his moped
during class. True. Yeah, that one is true.
So,
but he did have a few that happened on field. And again, I'm not saying anything about the way they coach or the way that they practice or whatever. I feel like he's just had a real string of some bad luck as far as being on the field goes. And I feel like if we can ever just stay healthy, we're finally starting to push some of those last few people out, you know, from that Spurrier, Spurrier era, when Spurrier quit recruiting. And, like, we're starting to finally get some of those guys that are juniors, seniors, that are all Muschamp guys. So I really do – I personally feel like the gap is tightening a lot faster than people give us credit for.
I'm going to jump in and add a couple things to what you said, Alex, for Richard, before you go. You talk about how they're just finding ways to win and stuff, and, you know, you're right. You're not wrong in that. And I know it's cliche of me to say this, but I honestly truly believe this for this specific – for the 2018 season – if Clemson played in the SEC, they're a 9-3 football team. I'm telling you that right now. They are not the number two team in the country. They are benefiting.
How many years have we been saying that?
No, I hadn't said it once until this year. I didn't say it one time until Deshaun Watson was there. I didn't say it last year.
Well, I mean, generally.
Hold on. I'm not done. They played two SEC teams, and Texas A&M should have beat them. And despite the fact that South Carolina doesn't have a defense, it was a touchdown game at halftime on the road for the Gamecocks. So you tell me if they had to play Georgia and Florida and LSU and Auburn and maybe Alabama and Mississippi State, if they wouldn't find a way to lose a couple football games. They played two middling SEC teams and got a legitimate scare from both of them. They're going to get boat raced in the playoff by somebody. It might not be in the first round, but if they make it to the championship game and play Alabama, Alabama is going to beat them by 30. I'm telling you. Write it down.
Boy, I hope you're right.
I am right.
But the Gabbycast version of Eeyore has to say, well, who cares in either way? It's just in my nature. I kind of lost my train of thought, honestly. Back to your point, Alex, if there's as far as the recruiting thing and as far as Muschamp with the injury deal, you know, heck, a streak of bad luck, trying real hard, having the right mindset, you know, really trying to do the right thing. But, buddy, you kind of walk around and you fall in a bag of hammers every once in a while. Man, isn't he just the most perfect South Carolina coach ever in the history of ever? I mean, he just is the Gamecock experience. You know, try real hard, plucky, give it a shot, feel good, and just damn, bad luck just seems to follow you around everywhere. But, I mean, and as far as the recruiting thing, yeah, I think in college football especially, you know, we always like to revert back to the stupid, simple reaction of recency bias, which is, you know, yeah, Clemson's been recruiting at X of a level. Alabama's been recruiting at X of a level. Oklahoma always has a top five recruiting class. Southern Cal always has a top 15 recruiting class. Blah, 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 blah. It doesn't really friggin' matter whatever's going on. So we tend to say, well, that's just going to continue. Like, those things are absolutes. Well, it's not. Let's rewind back to 2001 Alabama, where a Lou Holtz coached South Carolina team just blew the doors off of a middling, averaging 7 wins Alabama team for the better part of 6 years. 6 and 7 years essentially is what we're looking at. And so, you know, on Friday, I guess it was, I went back through a lot of statistics about recruiting, historical recruiting averages. So you're looking at like 6 to 7 year, maybe 8 year recruiting cycles. And to talk about upcycling and downcycling and recruiting averages. So South Carolina experienced the exact same thing in the 2009-2010 portion of our recruiting process. Now, those were 2 or 3, depending on what you want to talk about, 2 or 3 massive classes of recruiting for South Carolina. Clemson's number right now, this was the 2015 recruiting class. That was the master of this whole ordeal. They are experiencing the height of that now. If you want to go by conventional wisdom, that should begin to taper off. Don't know if that's true or not. Alex, you're 100% right in that regard. I feel like 2014, 2015, 2016 were massive classes. Now, yes, there are some bits and bobs and huge signings in between, but that does not a bellwether recruiting class make. Now, as far as the recruiting gap, I say yes, that it is tightening, but to that point, as far as how good the 2015 and 2016 recruiting classes for Clemson were, especially on the defensive side of the football, the gap had never been wider, at least in my estimation of the whole entire ordeal. So of course it's like contracted in some way, shape, or form. But I will say that, you know, for me, Clemson's still on a fundamental level, at least on the 2 deep and the 3 deep side of the football, has still built this juggernaut of death. I mean, they played 66 players last night before deciding to, like, I guess, whatever it was, stop playing with their food or stop trying to go easy on us or whatever it is. You ask a random Clemson fan what they felt like about, you know, going for it on fourth down with 39 seconds left, up 2 touchdowns. Anywho, we can talk about that until the end of time, but there's this dearth of talent on South Carolina from the second string, third string, fourth string. There's a fall off, and I get that we are not just physically able to just create that talent overnight, but the whole team, there are some spot gaps. And now I know that, like, what we've been talking about the whole entire night with BMAC and with Coach Muschamp and T-Rob all kind of together recruiting at a level that is filling all these humongous holes. And you see that just right on the field with the fact that, heck, some of these true freshmen are probably the best players on the field at points, but they're just not ready for you know, the Saturday Night Lights or whatever it is. Maybe I'm going to be proven wrong, but I still feel like there are some gaps there. But as far as it relates to Clemson, I keep getting pulled in the other direction by just something about me. Maybe it's this defeatist, fatalist South Carolina fandom part of me that wants to find a way to snatch defeat out of the claws of victory.
Richard, let me talk you off the ledge here, man. Let me talk you off the ledge. a little bit.
Okay.
All right. So
I for one am ready to feel happy.
Do you remember the score 2 years ago, in 2016, Muschamp's first year against Clemson?
I do.
What was the score, Richard?
Never mind. Sorry, I don't remember.
56-7. Last year, 34-10, in a game that they were up 34-0 going into the fourth quarter and called the dogs off, and it wasn't that close. It wasn't 34-10 close. That was at home last year.
That football game was unwatchable last year.
I think it was, 24-0 at halftime? And then on the first play of the second half, Clemson ran a bubble screen to Renfro, the guy who's been there for like 15 years, and he ran 80 yards for a touchdown.
Can we get that freaking kid to the Patriots already? I mean, seriously.
So compare last night to those 2 years. Last night was by far and away the most competitive game Will Muschamp, South Carolina football, has had against Clemson since he's been here. You can look at the scoreboard and tell that, one, we're a much better team than we were 2 years ago, and that the gap is closing. And we did that without a healthy defense on the field. I'm telling you, if we field a healthy defense last, and I'm talking about just like you have your run-of-the-mill injuries, you're missing two or three dudes, you know, that everybody's missing this time of year. Say you have Bryce Allen Williams and DJ Wanham and three of your safeties back. That's a very winnable football game last night with those five, you know, say Jamias Williams, Bryce Allen Williams, DJ Wanham, and Nick Harvey and JT eBay. Just theoretically say that. I'm not playing can we go back in time. I'm just playing hypotheticals here. You put those guys on the field, and I'm not saying we shut down their offense, but I think we hold them to the low 40s, you know. I think we force a few punts. I think we might get a turnover. We definitely have a better pass rush. We probably make Lawrence feel uncomfortable. I feel like we might not win, but I feel like last night would have been, while it was pretty competitive for the most part, would have been a very legitimate competitive football game with a healthier defense.
I mean, you played a decent chunk of the game without Javon Kinlaw, too.
You can make the argument that Clemson is cycling down in a way, but it's not like a negative thing to say that, because it's like what Alex said. They topped out 3 years ago. I mean, they had the best year they could have possibly had 3 years ago. They had nowhere to go but down from 2016. So, yeah, part of it is they're cycling down because that's the nature of college athletics. Yes, Clemson is a good football team. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying they're bad. I'm just saying they're not what they were when Deshaun Watson was a junior playing quarterback. We are a much better team than we were 2 years ago. We are significantly better than we were last year and the year before that. The last night's game was competitive, and, I mean, if you really paid attention on TV, when that game went to halftime, that stadium was dead silent. And they were up a touchdown. And they were nervous. I really think they were nervous. And I don't know. They might come to Columbia next year and beat the dog crap out of us. They might beat the brakes off of us. I don't know. But I think if you just look at the scoreboard, it shows you that and you watch the game and you make arguments based on the context of a football game, I think it's hard to argue that the gap is not closing. I mean, the gap's closing, and it's closing fast, and it's closing faster than some Clemson fans want to admit. And there's a reason, in my opinion, there's a reason they were bitching and moaning about only beating us by three touchdowns last night. It's because they know that we're getting closer, and I think they're nervous. Just my opinion. The gap's closing, and
it's hashtag cult so fragile.
So, anyway, because of Hurricane, whichever one it was, we get to play a football game on December 1st. Unfortunately, it won't be in Atlanta, but we do get to play the mighty Big Ten powerhouse, Akron Zips. Oh, wait, they're from the MAC. They're from the Big Ten Junior. Alex, what you got for Akron?
You know, I don't know. Overall, it seems like they're not very good, but they might be the best 4-7 team in the country. Like, when they're good, they're super good. Like, they've beaten the team that's getting ready to play for the Big Ten title. But when they're bad, they're, like, really bad.
That team that you're referencing is also 7-5, so...
Exactly, and so that's the thing, like... You know, I'm not really sure, like, what to take from this game. We're just, like, so depleted on defense, so it's one of those things where we just need to try to get the ball back and score touchdowns and hope to hold them to field goals, I think. You know, it could be a shootout. I hope it's not, but I'm going to say the Cocks win 42-31.
Love it. All right, Richard, quickly, yeah, what you got?
You're talking about a... I mean, you're talking about the, you know, a transitive
Big Ten West championship
in the Big Ten title game, but yet you're also talking about a team that, well, I mean, you're talking about a team that got, like, boat raced by Miami of Ohio. Like, a lot of this stuff is just, I don't know. I can't really place a finger on this. It's really hard for me to handicap playing the Akron Zips, but I still want to say the way that their metrics work out, they're allowing 28-ish points a game to some really odd competition. When they're bad, boy, they're bad. And when they're good, they can beat the 15th ranked team in the country. I mean, they can beat Northwestern. Whoop-de-doo. Hell, Duke can beat Northwestern, and we can see what Duke is capable of doing. Props to Wake Forest.
Losing 59-7 to Wake Forest.
Unbelievable. I mean, hell, Grammer can beat Northwestern for all we know. So, I don't know. Let's go 34-13.
So, let's say that. Akron is bad. Our defense is depleted, but our offense is good. Probably need to have a similar offensive game plan in terms of aggressiveness Saturday and in the bowl game because the defense is just so downtrodden injury-wise. I do think this will be a good game for our young guys on defense to get experience. Because it's a beatable opponent, you know. I mean, you're not asking the world of them to go out there and stop Clemson's offense. I mean, you know, it's Akron. So they can get quality reps, but not be overwhelmed by the moment, if that makes sense. Akron's, if we execute and don't just poop around, and there's your Spurrier reference, just don't poop around and crap the bed, I don't think Akron can stop our offense. I think we do enough on defense to win comfortably. I do think that we maybe cause a couple turnovers. Let's say one of the freshman corners gets an interception while Fenton gets 3 pass interference calls. I'm way more excited about this game than I thought I would be after losing to Clemson, but that's what, I don't know. I'm encouraged. Again, I'm just encouraged by the way we showed the way we played at Clemson Saturday night. Also, this is your last chance to see Debo, Zach Bailey, and all the other seniors play at Williams-Brice. Be there early. You got nothing else to do on December 1st. Cox win 52-28.
Bang.
Battle armor.
Give me all Garnet white lids.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to go an entirely different direction on this, and I feel like we're going to break out the tricolor pasta.
Oh, God. Are you going white shirts at home?
Huh?
Are you going with white shirts at home?
Did I misplace that on the outline?
No. Just say what you got. I want to hear it.
No, all right, sorry. I was thinking white pants, black shirt, Garnet helmets.
I love it. Actually, I would love that combo. That's a very 1980s look for us.
It is the damnedest thing. And you know what? It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if we broke out the script lids for this one again, just, you know, because, you know, why the hell not?
Well, it gets people, for whatever reason, it gets people riled up. I don't understand why it creates controversy, but it does.
Exactly. And I mean, and I'm all for, I mean, anything that would create any sort of interest in anything South Carolina sports related, I mean, I'm all for it.
I'm going to go with the 2018 Outback Bowl combination, black helmets, black shirts, white pants.
I wouldn't hate that either.
That's a sharp look. I'm telling you, that's a sharp look.
All right, Sam is going for 5 correct predictions this year.
Yeah, by far and away the best uniform predictor on this podcast. While also being the worst crystal game ball predictor on this podcast. So I'll own both.
It's a tough balancing act.
Yeah.
Speaking of crystal game balls, I'm going to give you an opportunity to totally redeem yourself in a second, but Alex still gets to go first.
Well, hold on. Alex, I'm just going to say, when you say it's a tough balancing act, I just want to say it takes a lot of talent to be me.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Obviously. I mean, you know,
I don't doubt that.
Yeah.
Takes a lot of something.
Oh.
This is kind of a cop out, but it's not really because we are so depleted, but I'm going to say the whole defense, crystal game ball here. And I say that the entire depleted defense gets at least 2 takeaways against Akron.
Love it.
Yowza. All right. And I'm trying to riff off of a similar theme here, playing a non-conference opponent, especially one that you have absolutely no idea where's up and where's down and where's left and where's right. Special teams tend to play a lot in either a positive or a negative performance. And for me, this is going to be more of a feel-good thing than anything. And it is going to be that Parker White kicks at least 7 kicks, all of which are good.
Jesus.
I've rolled the dice on Parker before. Now, I'm also including PATs in this.
Oh, I thought you meant 7 field goals. Like, damn.
No, just a combined 7.
Okay. Parker makes 7 kicks combined.
Okay.
Throughout the game. Does not miss one. And in the era of our, like, viral media videos about blah, 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 Parker White gets his ass a scholarship at some point in time over the next week. And we get to watch a video of Parker White getting a scholarship.
All right. Bam. And I'm going to go with Old Reliable and abstain.
Which also, by the way, how the hell is Parker White not on scholarship? Is like one of the things that I want to talk about. But
all right,
we won't have to worry about that because
we have Twitter
scholarship next week.
We have Twitter questions.
We're going to be all good.
We have Twitter questions. So, locked in the cockpit. So, for those of you who don't know, Brad Crawford, guy who covers national football, supposedly, for 24/7 Sports, or 247 Sports, whatever you want to call it, said he heard from a, quote, source, that the Gator Bowl was very much in play, and that it would be against Miami. So, locked in the cockpit wants to ask, score prediction of a South Carolina versus Miami Gator Bowl. Guys, Miami's not very good. I would actually very much like that matchup.
They're horrible.
And I would much rather play a ACC team this year than some tough Big Ten squad.
And I think if you go back and I think if you
go kick the shit out of Mark Richt,
I was about to say, I think if you go back and look at the record books, Muschamp has a pretty good record against old Mark Richt.
And we'd have a healthy defense by then.
Yes.
Hopefully. Maybe. Probably not.
Cox by 90.
Okay, can we talk about how I'm looking at Miami's pre-game or preseason, like, media poll predictions? Okay, one, can we talk about how they were the overwhelming favorite to win the Coastal Division? Can we also talk about how North Carolina got a first-place vote for the Coastal Division?
Mm.
North Carolina went 2-10.
Mac Brown just sliding in the DMs like,
hey, is Texas back? Nope, but Mac Brown is.
Mac Brown is.
Ed Taylor.
He just finds a way to get hired.
Ed Taylor, have you ever seen a team with so many injuries on one side of the ball? What do you think is attributing to these injuries? Ed, we kind of talked about this earlier. I mean, no, at least not since Muschamp was at Florida back in 2013.
I mean, we're getting a lot. And so, like, this is just going to be me hypothesizing for 30 seconds or so. But it seems to me like we've got a lot of lower leg injuries, a lot of ankle, a lot of, like, knee, mid, like,
Under Armour.
Everywhere below the knee. And Coach Muschamp alluded to this yesterday or day before, that we've got a lot of cut block, blah, 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 blah. Is the way that we're officiating the football game kind of lending itself to, these guys are just going to get more foot shots and cut blocks?
Yeah, it is, because you've totally taken away the upper part of the body. So the next and the natural progression for a football player is to hit low. And what's low? Well, people's knees. So, yeah. Thanks, Wofford. Richard.
You were molded by the dark. I was born in it.
All right. So Chuck Hendricks II asks, why couldn't that offense play all season? Where are all the Jake Bentley haters, and how are people still blaming the offense? Y'all can take
I don't know
one.
If I've heard anybody really blame the offense.
Oh, they're out there.
That's ridiculous.
Go read a message.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people that I'm like, oh, well, the play calling inside the five. Like, well, what the hell do you expect them to do?
Yeah, here's the thing. Like, the offense has been there all year. We just haven't been making plays. Like, we've been calling these kind of games, but, like, I specifically go back and look at, like, A&M. We dropped 100 passes. You go back and look at Florida. We couldn't stop the run. It had nothing to do with the offense.
Alex,
you go back and look at Kentucky. I mean, like,
Alex,
the offense is –
I'll do you one better. You look at the Georgia game. There are one, that drop pass that Rico Dowdle had off his face mask that essentially turned into a pick six. And then, Richard, tell me if I'm wrong, but they were sitting here in the stadium looking, there were no fewer than three plays where Shy Smith was wide-ass open behind the defense. Jake Bentley just didn't see him.
Right. Yeah. Exactly my point. Like, the offense has been there. And, you know, if anything, this season is probably more on our inability to tackle.
Yeah.
So, and you know, people can knock it off with the offensive stuff. Like,
we're
playing just fine on offense.
But, you know, we were also talking about this earlier, Alex. I think the biggest change has been when McClendon moved down out of the box. I mean, one, his receivers have played much better. Okay, give him credit where it's due. He's still a receivers coach, and his receivers have played much better. But two, I think it's a big thing for a quarterback to be able to go to the sidelines and talk to his offensive coordinator face-to-face. And the offensive coordinator go, all right, what are you seeing? You know, what do you see? What is the game
feel like?
As opposed
to doing it over the phone.
Right. There's a lot to be said for a face-to-face conversation rather than over that little red telephone they have that goes up to the press box. You know, I mean, there's a distinct difference in the offensive production since McClendon moved down to the sideline. So,
and for what it's worth, I think that the biggest key to Jake Bentley's increase in production has been his ability to work through his progressions. You know, whether you call it
and
you know, whatever
just,
that football person thing is, the eye discipline or whatever it is.
I think a lot of it is a combination of factors with his receivers playing well now and the running game having some success and the offensive line, they've been playing well all year. You know, I just think he's calmer because of all of those things combined. And if I'm not lying, I think Skarnecki's performance against Missouri kind of lit a fire in his ass to play a little better.
I think so.
You know, I think it scared him. I think he's like, my starting job's not so secure as I thought it was. You know, so I don't know. That's just my two cents. Not that anybody cares.
Gamecock football scared straight.
We're always so good at ending these things.
Well, I mean, because we're, you know, so highly paid and so professional.
You get what you pay for.
Gentlemen, it's always a pleasure to podcast with you again. After our week off sabbatical, tryptophan-induced coma that resulted in a no-podcast, there is still light at the end of the tunnel. This Gamecock team can finish with 8 wins if it runs the table on the way out. Golly, Moses, that would be kind of funny if we got to do it and just kick Mark Richt in the butt for no reason other than just because it's fun. The listeners, you don't have to make us a part of your day, but you do, and we're glad for it. Drive safe, go Cox, tip your waitress. We'll be right back.